Okay, we ready to move on to number three?
This is good, this is really good news, Nathan.
You know, I'll try to make it brief to make it even better news.
Did you vote on it?
Yeah.
We're done.
Okay.
We're done.
I guess I slept through it.
I don't know what happened to it.
Yeah, yeah, we did. Yeah, Nathan's gonna give us a presentation here.
I did just real quick want to acknowledge Courtney, who did the technology side of making it possible for Mark to be piped in today.
Yeah.
Good job, Courtney.
Impressive.
That could have went sideways six times.
Got a little nervous with the in and out on the audio.
So Nathan, you're gonna talk about water subsidies?
No.
Not in this session. My name is Nathan Alburn. Thank you, Chair and Commissioners, and welcome to the new Commissioners. My name is Nathan Alburn. I'm Water Resource Engineer. I work with Larry Howard. For those of you who don't know him, he's been here 30-plus years, brilliant man. And so I'm going to be sharing with you today about water rights for residential developments. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, we can share at another time more details about what water rights are, how they apply to housing developments, and why they're important and why they're cost change and why that we even did this study in the first place. So just recently we completed a water rates or water use study. Michelle Erickson, part of the Water Division team, did a lot of work, did a great job. And two of the main key points that we were trying to do to in this process were to look at structures that were built since the low fixtures have been put in place, mandated by the government, and also to look at the current trends of how people are using water as people get more educated and as people get more and more familiar with water efficiency and water conservation. So to do that, we analyzed data from 2008 to 2017, and we only looked at houses that had been built since those mandates were put in place. We looked at a number of different meters, 120 of the single family detached, 117 of single family attached, and then 122 meters at multifamily. You can see that we had a number of different subdivisions represented as well, so it wasn't just clustered in one area of town. It was fairly spread out. As you can imagine, the town has kind of built out, and so it was more the outer perimeter of the newer developments. We calculated both average indoor and outdoor water usage by the different dwelling types. And based on the study, we determined the potential water rights that would be required. We observed the water usage itself, but then we also calculated for system loss factors. That's natural losses that happen in any system just from leaks and pipes and movement of water, but we also have a reservoir that has evaporation. And then there's also water losses that we anticipate, like for firefighting and for flushing and things of that nature. We also accounted for vacancies in the multifamily category, and that's done because there's a certain amount of vacancies that they actually report, and so we take that into account. And finally, we apply to the 99% confidence level. I won't get into details about statistics and such, but essentially, when you take only a sample size, you want to make sure that sample size actually represents the entire amount that you have. And so we take kind of that bell curve type of approach, and that's what that represents. It also somewhat applies to the fact that City Council has given us directive to do a 1-in-100-year drought, and so we're kind of playing along with that, and the fact that we have 99% is that 1% of that 1-in-100-year. So the water use study findings, we had several main takeaways. One, indoor water use per dwelling has decreased across the board. Outdoor water use per lot has decreased across the board. But single family detached units, that's your typical traditional single-family home, uses substantially more water, both indoor and outdoor, than the other types of dwelling units. So, in the end, staff recommends that we do an adjustment to the current water rights calculation to be more in line with the observed water use trends. our current equation is this down below here, and it covers all types of dwelling units, whether multifamily, single family, detached, attached, no matter what, this is what we use to calculate. And when we did create this calculation, this formula, it represented, and we found that it represented the structures all throughout the city very well. But as habits change and as people change, we found it's no longer representative. So we are recommending that we put a table into the Title 19 and break out the different family units by their types so that it's a little bit easier to understand. So there's two main components to water rights when we do the calculation. There's an indoor use and there's an outdoor component. You'll notice the single family detached, again, that's your traditional family home. It's going to have a slight lowering, goes from 0.23 to 0.22. It's roughly about 4.5% lowering in the water rights, and that's for the indoor component. The outdoor component, without going too much into the details, when you have something like a park that has a lot of turf grass, it takes about 3 acre-feet per acre in order to irrigate that and keep it nice and green the way people like. So in each outdoor water use component, you'll see that the two lines match 1.4 and 1.6 equals to that 3 acre-feet. So the first column is for that to take into consideration that you have a lot that has a house on it. And so a portion of that lot is taken up by the house. That's why it doesn't equal 3 acre-feet. But once you get above 15,000 square feet, you're talking about a state type lot. We figure after that point, people have a lot more area to irrigate, and therefore it kicks into the 1.6. So you'll notice on the next line, we've got a new category, cottage homes, and it equals 3 by the two outdoor components. They add up to 3. But the other takeaway right here is this is a brand new category, both cottage homes and micro homes, and they have a very small water use. We don't have actually any data for cottage homes or micro homes because it is a new category. We anticipate that they will likely use less water. Until we have data, that's the kind of the credit we're going to give. So next I have a couple of examples. Again, your typical single family detached home, kind of a mid-size, 3,200 square foot. The square footage of the home doesn't really impact the water rights. The lot size, however, does. So the current water calculation has 0.23 for indoor, 0.22 is the proposed equation. 0.24 for the outdoor, 0.21 for the outdoor and the proposed equation. All in total, it doesn't look like a whole lot of difference, only 0.04 acre feet, but when you're a developer, the dollar amount is what really impacts. And here's where the savings kicks in. At the current cash in lieu price of $37,220, little prelude to I'm gonna be asking for a suggested increase to that, but it's $1,500 worth of savings. And that's per dwelling unit. That makes a big difference when developers are trying to bring in a number of houses. The next category.
The net lot acres, that's, you subtract the house out?
We don't actually subtract the house out. That's what the 1.6 basically takes into account, that part of the house.
That's on average.
Yeah, on average, exactly. And Michelle looked at all sizes of lots within her study. So the next one is that new category. It's a very small house on a very small lot. You can kind of see the basic calculations. They're also in your packet. The big jump is from 0.23 to 0.16 because it's a smaller house. We figure less people typically and therefore less water use. The takeaway is 0.1 acre feet, which is $3,700 worth of savings for the cottage home. We also did a calculation for a micro home. It had a smaller lot, so a little less acreage in which to irrigate, but it was still $3,000 worth of savings. The next main part of the proposed table is for attached units. We've got single-family attached, that'd be like your townhomes. We also have a new category called cluster duplexes, and then multifamily, which would be your larger apartment complexes. The big savings, 0.16 from the traditional or the previous 0.23, it's about a 30% savings in water rights for the indoor use. The outdoor use, again, they equal 3 going across, and you can see that there's a savings, considerable amount of savings from 1.3 from previous of 1.6, about 18.5%. So a couple more examples. Single family, like a townhome, group of townhomes. The big takeaway here is $3,300 per unit. So the attached units save quite a bit. Another example here, a fairly small apartment complex, 8 units. Over $2,500 per unit savings in water rights calculation, again using the current cash in lieu of $37,220. Where the money, where the rubber really hits the road is for a really large multifamily unit, still $2,600 per unit, but the big takeaway here is $250,000 worth of water rights savings. The other thing to point out here is this is with a separate irrigation tap, so the outdoor irrigation hasn't changed at all, and the water rights there, but the indoor component is where all the savings is seen. So with that, we have a rollout schedule. I've already presented it, or Michelle actually presented it to the building outreach meeting, very positive reception. Was able to present it to Construction Advisory Board, or CAB. Unanimous vote to recommend change to City Council. Planning Commission was next. Again, the unanimous vote, and now to you as the Loving Utilities Commission. City Council, we anticipate first reading and then August 20th for the second reading where it would take into effect. So, any questions?
I just have one question.
Yes, sir.
As a developer comes in with a certain aspect of development, we're asking them to pay the equivalent water rights in terms of dollars. Are we still asking them to come up with the water if they can do that?
Yes. So they always have 3 main choices. Either they can bring in native ditch rights that we accept in the city, and most of you have been participant in when we brought those actually in. They can bring in CBT, they can use the water banks, I actually got 4, or they can do cash in lieu. So they have a number of different options, and we still have a number of shares. You'll hear in the water bank, or in the raw water master plan presentation next month, that we actually were showing 4,500 acre feet within the water bank that's still available.
Yeah.
Not all of them are on the interested sellers list, but yeah.
So the money you said the city is receiving, are we going out and purchasing CBT water or other water sources?
No, we're basically building up a amount in order to pay for Chimney Hollow. That's the main drive right now for our cash in lieu, and that's something that's an excellent point is, if you don't have a project in the future to be looking for, you know, it's not wise to charge cash in lieu. And there's a number of cities that don't because they don't have projects. So yeah, that's a good question.
So cash in lieu is supposed to reflect what the prevailing CBT price is for a share of water, right?
Correct.
How much water do you get out of a share of CBT?
So we are actually going to propose, and I'll be sharing that, so you're a little bit ahead of me. So we've just recently done a raw water yield analysis, and we have a consultant, outside consultant, that runs through like a multiple year scenario, and it's about 0.9 is what we receive. Now the average for CBT for the allotment each year is about 0.75. So there's a number of cities that only get 0.75 acre feet
per share
per unit. Yeah.
So if a developer has a demand for an acre foot, he doesn't go and get one share of CBT, he's got to get 1 point, whatever, 3 shares of CBT to balance the books, right?
For the city of Loveland, currently, it's one share equals, or I'm sorry, one unit equals 1 acre foot. And so we're one of the few cities, one of the few providers that actually gives one for one. We will be recommending in next month that we lower that to 0.9 acre feet for one unit of CBT. But that's obviously, it's got to go through city council and stuff before that gets approved. But that is an excellent question. And the analysis that we've done, the reason why we're able to do that better is because we have storage of Green Ridge Glade. We also utilize what's called carryover every year. And so on the dry year when CBT is most valuable, we're able to make it stretch basically further than normal. So, and we don't rely just on CBT. If we did, then that quota that's set every year would be much more of a factor. But it's an excellent question. Did I answer your question?
You did.
Okay.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
We've had this discussion a lot.
Yeah.
It's always underway how much value we give to a CBT and what we're going to charge for it. So
absolutely.
We'll discuss it on the next item. So.
Yeah.
Can you go back up?
Sure.
I think it's one slide. Maybe. No, one more. So so it's the indoor use on a multifamily that the analysis said I'm going to use the word savings, but there was a reduction. Can you go back? I think it's maybe the second slide where you sort of first introduced that idea.
We're
way back to the beginning of the presentation.
Too far. That one?
No, one back.
Okay.
So indoor water use per dwelling has decreased. Okay, and then one more back, please.
That's just the introduction.
Yep. So the study looked at 100, the lower left box there, those subdivisions and the 120 water meters, those were all post low flow.
Yeah,
fixtures.
1997 was the cutoff.
Okay, and I thought in that next slide it said it showed demand or use decreasing.
Yep.
Within that class, within that grouping, over a period of time they decreased, or that group is a decrease as compared to the pre-low flow developments.
So basically, looking at what they're currently using and the trend from 2008 to 2017 compared with what the water rights calculation was. So we basically looked at the actual usage and based a water rights calculation off of that.
I get that piece of it.
Okay.
But what I thought this was telling us is, hey, their usage is less than what's being used or what was dedicated.
She didn't do that.
No, she didn't. We didn't look at every single house and looked at what it was actually, what their water rights were charged. We looked at the current usage. So basically looking forward, saying, okay, here are the trends that we're seeing, and because we're a cost of service, we want to make sure that we're charging cost of service. But I may not be getting at your question.
She did not do a comparison of these newer homes with older homes and compared water usage. That
right.
comparison okay. did not occur.
Yeah.
This was strictly this subset. And again, as Nathan just said, it was an idea to look forward and say, we believe this is the water that they will use on a go-forward basis, a new development will use, right? And then they said, what's the raw water requirements for under these new circumstances? And then adjusted the old water requirements, adjusted the old ones to these new ones.
So maybe you answered it and I just didn't hear it. So that first bullet there, the indoor water usage per dwelling has decreased. If I finish that out, check me if I'm right, has decreased as compared to what was dedicated. think that's a correct statement.
Yeah, I suppose that, yeah, that is technically, because everything that we took, that we looked at in the survey and the study had already been previously dedicated, so true.
Okay.
That's true.
Okay, and so to Joe's point, it's projecting out to the future, it's logical to assume that indoor fixtures are only going to get more and more efficient. Therefore, the amount of water necessary dedicated for indoor use should see some reduction, and that's what that slide was showing, is that the outdoor side, maybe not so much, but the indoor side could really achieve some savings.
And I think it's probably a double, both components. I mean, we've seen reduction in both, on both sides, and depending on people's trends and their habits, whether they start doing more xeriscaping, whether irrigation systems become more efficient, you know, we may see some lowering there. We don't know yet. The interesting thing, a little side note, there's a development out in Sentara area that they put in a lot of xeriscaping, and they were curious of whether they have actually seen reduction in their water usage, and they haven't.
Yeah.
Because they are basically, the practice, the xeriscaping is there, but the people's education and practice, I'm guessing, is not there yet. So it's kind of a component that has to happen both ways. It's kind of like what Ryan often points out. You know, you may have a dual flush toilet, it uses very little water, but if you have to flush it twice, or in the habit, or your kids are, then it doesn't use much less water. So.
Thank you.
We switched from all grass to about 80% xeriscaping, and I would disagree with whatever that now. We've seen about a 30% drop.
And that's great. And it's not a thing of disagreeing, it's numbers. So it's not something that we're just looking at the straight numbers. Some people probably did see a reduction, but in this case, we didn't see it. So
yeah. Larry's exceptional.
Larry's exceptional, man.
But he's probably educated too.
Yeah.
And I just, I'm sorry, Larry. I just wanted to say something about the study that Michelle did. It was extraordinarily rigorous. It was extraordinarily, from both an evaluation standpoint and then a math standpoint. I am very, you know, obviously water is very sensitive issue. I am very, very confident in these numbers. And we stand by them, and I think they're accurate, and they do reflect the trend that that is being seen nationwide as far as water use indoors. So,
yes, sir.
And I also want to compliment you and Michelle and Larry and whoever else worked on the staff. That was unbelievably a lot of work in a great report.
Michelle gets
so.
The biggest. Credit.
Assuming that this will all get passed and passed through City Council, which I would suspect we should do, what is the follow-up plan to verify that we haven't blown it and we just actually knew what we were talking about, so we're not giving away
right.
water we don't have?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's anticipated that we will revisit this. How soon, whether it's every, you know, in 5 years, we'll look at it again. Or 10 years? What I don't have. We don't have
I don't
a
like
set.
That term 10 years. I like
5 years. Probably, you know.
It's a big change, so that's why I think
they
ought to have a follow-up plan.
Oh,
to
I
try to verify
I agree.
What you think is going to happen is happening.
Absolutely. One of the other things that we anticipate, and we'll talk about this in the Raw Water Master Plan, is that even though there will be continued efficiency with fixtures, there will be kind of an eventual where it plateaus. There's only so much. How little water you can use washing your hands or taking a shower or whatever before it's a dirt bath, I guess. But anyway, any other questions?
I move to recommend that City Council approve the proposed revisions to sections 19.04.010 definitions and 19.04.020 water rights required for development of the Lovell Municipal Code as shown. As presented today, and in the proposed ordinance, or as revised in form and substance as necessary.
Is there a second?
Yes.
Any more discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? All right. Good.
Thank you very much.
Nathan,
give me a second.
The backup materials you gave us are so well done, too.
Yes. Good job. Okay, now we're going to discuss market value of CBT.
You get me again.
Yes.
My name is Nathan Oliver.
Still?
I'm still water resource engineer. So let's get that aside. This is fairly common for a big chunk of you. For the gentleman that just came and you guys were asking about the average CBT. So we look at the last 6 months of the CBT prices. We get a document every month where it talks about the number of shares that were sold and the price they were sold at. And so you can see that. We take a weighted average. The middle thinner bar is the number of units that were sold at that price. The different colors represent the different months. The months that we actually looked at are represented by the yellow and the gold. Then you can see just prior to that the number of units that were sold. So there wasn't a whole lot of activity up until December, and all of a sudden we got a flourish of activity. And recently we've actually seen prices closer to $48,000 to $50,000. So we anticipate coming back again, and for this price to potentially increase even more. So the current recognized price is $35,444 per unit. We add an additional 1.5% to that, and that's why our current cash in lieu price is $37,220. We're recommended by the weighted average of increasing that recognized value to $37,453 per unit, and that will translate to $39,330 per acre foot. Again, that's with a recognized value of 1 acre foot for one unit. We do anticipate next month bringing in the raw water master plan to then ask for 0.9 acre feet for each unit, which will make a significant jump to this price because we always divide it by that percentage. And so this will increase to, what was it, Ryan, about 43,500 or so?
Yeah, I think it was 43,540.
So that is a very brief presentation. You can see how the prices continue to increase, and that's why we are also bringing that water rights suggested calculation change as well. And you have this price is in here, but we're recommending that the recognized price of $37,453, and that will translate to the cash in lieu price of $39,330 per acre foot.
John,
any questions?
Sorry, yes. Did you say we revisit this every 6 months?
No, the data is 6 months. So the Loveland Utilities Commission has given us the direction that any time that price increases by 5% or more, then that we bring it back to you. So
what has been the cash in lieu payments development in the last 6 months or so?
But so I've personally taken down to finance checks in excess of $1 million on more than one occasion for various developments or irrigated areas.
Perhaps you answered the question, but I'll ask it a different way. Of the developments that are occurring in the last 6 months, how many of them are doing cash in lieu versus the other two options?
Typically, what I've seen in almost every single transaction, there's only two interested sellers currently within the CBT and cash credit side of the water bank, and so they don't always work out. So people will get shares within the water bank for native ditch shares and pay cash in lieu for the other half, because it's a 50-50 that is required when they bring in water. And we'll go into more detail about that some other time. But nonetheless, so it's usually about half and half is what I've seen.
And you said earlier, the other presentation, that the, sorry, I had a follow-up question. The cash in lieu is currently being put away for Windy Gap, firming Jenny Hollow.
Correct.
Given this price and the potential that the cost of cash in lieu next month or future months will go up as a result of the 0.9.
Right.
Has there been any projection as to, assuming all things stay the same, we will have the amount of money we're targeting for Jimmy Hollow by X year, X date?
That's a good question. I've never really looked at it.
I think what it would come down to, Sean, we would just have to adjust the amount we were borrowing for our part of the Jimmy Hollow project.
I have a,
would we ever get to a never borrow?
That's very doubtful.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it would be a pretty big...
Between never borrow?
Yeah, like we got so much cash in lieu, we don't even have to borrow money.
Wow, that'd be a modern miracle. I think right now we have programmed in around $40 million of borrowing.
And how much cash in lieu?
We had mid-teens. We've been paying cash, not cash in lieu. We're paying cash. Isn't it the mid-teens, Jim?
I mean, in terms of how much cash we would bring to the table, mm-hmm. it's about $18 million.
Here. Okay.
So does the cash in lieu go into a designated fund?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Can I ask Sean's question a different way? To the extent you can, it's impossible, but what's the pessimistic idea of what the firm yield of an acre foot Windy Gap is now?
I think it's about 2.5. So for every acre foot of water that we have storage of, we anticipate that it takes about 2.5 of those in order to translate to 1 acre foot of firm yield. That's about the rough number that Larry uses.
I mean, it's cost.
Oh, in cost. Currently, so it's about $7,000 an acre foot, and so multiply that times 2.5, so roughly 20,000, less a little.
That's what you figure it's going to cost when we get done with the storage?
Right now.
Yeah.
And still is a bargain compared to what the market price is for CBT.
That's
kind of the equation that we're looking at.
So
right
now.
Why
is trying to. This is surplus. This is Windy Gap water we can.
Yeah. Windy Gap water we can't store.
And how many acre feet on the average is that?
We can't store any.
No, so how much are we losing on the average? That's what I mean.
Depends on the year. Depends on the year. I mean, there are some years where there's no Windy Gap available at all.
Yeah, and we did spill this year.
This year we
so
spilled.
We lost a bunch. We didn't personally, but Windy Gap.
So when they bring this in and we're doing it, when they bring the water in, we're doing it for Windy Gap, for Jimmy Hollow, then we're just assuming that's Windy Gap water that we already own. So are we still building acre feet within to go against anticipated population growth?
This will provide the Chimney Hollow will firm up Windy Gap water because Windy Gap water is not firm. And so yes, this will add considerably.
We've never counted that before. So we're actually buying, in a sense, we're obtaining acre feet to balance.
We're firm, yes, sir. We're firming it up.
And we'll also talk about that a little bit next time, and that was part of that yield analysis.
I have another question. You know, if I was in business and I saw that yield curve going up and I'm trying to sell steel, I wouldn't use an average of 6 months. I mean, that'd be crazy when I know I could be selling it at 40, I could be selling at 40,000.
Right.
Why aren't we doing that, asking for 40,000?
So
I think this is too low.
Like maybe a 3 month average or something of that nature? That's certainly a direction LUC can give us, is to take only 3 months or whatever LUC would determine. That's, you know.
If the market tanks, we can always change the rule, but I think this is too low. I understand our rule, and I have no problem with it, but I think the rule ought to change.
And I don't know that, I think it's more of a policy than a specific. Do you? I don't think we specify that it has to be 6 months of average.
So how many transactions are taking place relative to purchase of CBT? It doesn't look like a whole lot of shares are changing hands. This isn't an especially dynamic market, correct?
No, it's not. It's not huge. I'll go back to this slide here. So this represents the number of units, and this thinner bar is the number of units. You can see very few transactions. There was one large one in April where it was about 60 units. We also saw one back in January that was another 60 units, and one in December that was over 60 units. So it's not a huge market, but part of the problem is the fact that it's so expensive, and there's becoming less and less that's available. Even
and the units 1 acre feet.
No, a unit is basically each year a quota is set, and
so it's only 0.7 acre feet.
That's the average, about 0.7, 0.75. Yeah, right.
Email us a lot to say the limitations in the Stratacom data. There's often transfers going on, but the data reports we get, some of those are inter-party transfers. So if we don't see the money associated with those on a per unit basis, we don't include it here, because really all we can work with is where they report the transactions on a cost per unit basis. So if they just say this was transferred but don't have a cost associated with it, we don't show it here. So there is more going on than what we're showing.
Yes, that's true, definitely. Probably about, I'd say, anywhere from double the amount of transactions you see here. Yeah.
So we're getting down and down and down in available shares of CBT1.
We are. Recently, we asked the staff at Northern Water, and they said approximately 30,000 units are left.
30,000?
30,000 left for transfer to M&I.
What percentage of that is that?
That's what they're saying is 30,000 is available for.
It is ag.
Yeah. I mean, there's, yeah. Right now, that's all ag. But there's additional units above that will never. They anticipate will never transfer. That so they're saying 30,000 is available to potentially transfer to municipal and industry.
And are we taking into account this decreasing number of shares that are available in what we're including in our purchase price? That's only going to drive prices even higher.
It will, and you're right. And that's why Larry's suggestion of potentially looking at only 3 months might be something to take into consideration. Did you find anything?
And just, I mean, the only direction is that the commission is empowered to recognize the market price of one unit. The quotient is set by ordinance. That's the one unit yields 1 acre feet, and it's multiplied by 1.05. That's in the code. The city council can only modify, but the ordinance is, this is to what is your recognition of the market value? And I don't know the history of that methodology of 6 months. I don't know if anybody else does, but I think this is how it's always presented to you to recognize what that market value is.
It doesn't make any difference. Like there's a few years that we went several years without increasing because it didn't increase 5%. So it just depends on the market. But we've got to a point now that we're under the cap and we can still buy CBT water, but it's so expensive now. Probably not in our best interest to do it, but we could, according to Northern, that we can still purchase.
Yeah, it has to be available, obviously, to purchase, but yeah.
Does the city have a cap on the number of shares that it can own?
It does, but we have not reached that cap.
What's the delta there? Still to go?
I honestly don't know. That's a good question.
I think it's.
And now,
I think it's quite a few, 3,000 or something like that.
Yeah, that should be a number I have, but I don't, sorry.
My understanding is the city of Fort Collins has reached their cap.
Correct, that's my understanding.
Almost
as
all
well.
Of the cities Greeley, around us have. Greeley's, Gunner's, Fort Collins, Longmont.
Yeah.
And you have
we're the only one that has.
Has Thornton reached their cap too?
Who?
I don't think Thornton's within the CBT.
They can't have
CBT water. They can't have Clearwater, right?
That's why they're coming up here to get air.
Sean?
Just on the cap comment, keep in mind that doesn't preclude a developer from dedicating to the city of Fort Collins, for example, so they can still acquire CBT through dedication. Refresh my memory, how often do you receive the transaction report? Is that monthly?
Yeah, it's monthly, yeah.
So if the LUC is interested in doing something a little more real-time, if memory serves, when I was at Greeley, and maybe it was the 2000s when the market was really hot, maybe it was the late 90s, that board went to monthly and used that month's report to quantify the cash flow.
We could.
And then it died off, and they just backed off that.
And if that's the direction that LUC would like to give us, that we're certainly open to that. We can go 2 months, 1 month, 3 months.
I would like to just make a comment. My name is Gail Bernhardt, and I have shares in the water bank, and I'm also a water broker for the city of Loveland and surrounding cities. And I think it's important for you to know that there are other surrounding cities that only take CBT. That's all that they'll take for dedication. And I'm currently looking for CBT water for three developers in different cities, and literally I cannot find it, can't get it. So in my opinion, Loveland's done a really smart thing by going to water court and taking accepting some needed ditch water, because that's completely shut down development. Not being able to get CBT for other cities is shut down their development.
Thanks, Jim. In those cities, yeah.
Yeah, they can't. I mean, if you can't bring water in, you can't develop.
You can't develop.
Thanks, Gail.
Okay, I think we about beat this to death.
I move to approve resolution R-03-2019U, recognizing the city's current CBT market value at $37,453 per unit.
Solved. Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any more discussion?
Yes.
Okay.
I agree with Larry. I think we probably ought to be moving closer to what the latest sales are. And certainly I think we ought to be looking at it every month. If we don't do that this month, but at least what I'm saying, I don't think there's water out there, and I think it ought to be popped up to what the market's going.
So using that word subsidizing, if we don't have a market price, what are we doing now with it?
What, subsidizing? Well, I think we do have a market price. It's a rolling market price.
Yeah, but 6 months now is not appropriate.
Well, I mean, but look at you're taking into account everything back from say February on, and you're trying to account for the fact that you're trying to equilibrate is what you're trying to do. So. If you want to go to a month, we can bring that back as a action next month, then as an action, and then the new price.
Okay. And I can bring, if it adjusts, and I can bring both as a recommendation.
Bring back a month and 2 month in comparison, so okay. At least we can see if a 2 month is somewhat larger, but 6 months is probably not fit the market right now.
Okay, we got a motion, we got a second. Let's go ahead and vote on it, and if we can recommend the staff bring back and take a look at this every month or every 2 months if you want to.
We have to stick our.
All right. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, it's unanimous.
Thank you.
Joe, what do you want to do? You want to review this monthly or every 2 months? Or?
It's at the commission's pleasure.
So when you say review, instead of using the 5% increase, that's you just go to a monthly or bi-monthly incremental?
60 days, whatever you want, yeah.
Is that what you want? Randy?
Well, I think what my thought was, and I think Larry's too, is that weighted average going back 6 months, I think you ought to be looking more at that projection. It's rising faster, I think.
So would you like the 60-day, or would you like the last transaction? I will say the problem that was pointed out is that sometimes there's not a lot on that, so there may not necessarily, we could look at it monthly, but there may not be an adjustment on a monthly basis. Yeah. Sometimes the transactions just simply aren't there.
Or you don't know about it.
Yeah. or it's MASP, and I look at those every month, and gosh, sometimes out of what, a dozen or more, 15, 18 transactions, there's only three or four that you'll see the price, and the other ones are just transfers.
As Gail says, that there's a shortage, so there's not a whole lot of activity, so.
We'll work out a process to look at it on a real, basically a real-time basis, and if there's a change, we'll bring it. If not, we'll just say that there's no change. How's that?
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you. Right.
Okay. Thanks, Nathan.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Tanner. Not Nathan.
That's right. Yeah. Not Nathan.
Tanner.
Okay. And we're going to switch from raw water, too.
Yeah.
For those that don't know me, I'm Tanner Randall, Senior Civil Engineer in the Water and Wastewater side. And probably 6 months ago, there was a lot of discussion on the city going forward, a lot of it related to raw water, but some of it to our actual water infrastructure and how far we were planning out, especially as you talked about the budget, because a lot of you guys see the 10-year budget. So it just so happened that we were doing our water model and master plan update. We still are, just about to finish it. I thought it might be beneficial, and maybe it's good for some of you that are new, to hear just a broad overview of how we come up with building our water model and how that transfers into our master plan, which then goes into our budget. So it's high level, but if there are any questions, specific or not, stop me and we'll touch on them.
Okay.
So the update, why do we do it? A lot of different reasons. One, it's to look at an overview of our existing system. We're updating our water model, which we do semi-regularly, depending on what's changed in our distribution system. It also allows us to work on our capital planning. We update our capital plan every year on a rolling 10-year average, and so often we're looking at that year 10, but often out beyond those 10 years as well. So the purpose of it, a big piece is it's really what we call a roadmap for planning for the utility. So it looks at our plant capacity, our water usage. Nathan talked a little bit about that on the previous slide, what those trends are and how we project them forward. Big one that we often wonder, what are the triggers for when we need to build capacity or build new pipes? All that comes out of the master plan. And a piece that doesn't always happen, but we look at our operation, how it's going. How are we operating pumps? How are we operating tanks? All that stuff can be illuminated through the master plan process. Like I mentioned before, it's critical for our 10-year plan. We update roughly every 10 years, depending on what's happened, what has changed. The last master plan update's 2009. If you start thumbing through it, there's a lot of things that have changed over the last handful of years. So, big picture overview of our water system is on the screen. All of our water pipes are illustrated in blue. Nothing in detail to look at, but you can see the overall scope of the system. We have about 435 miles of pipe, roughly. It's always changing. We have six different pressure zones, which are highlighted in the different colors. Our largest pressure zone is not pressurized, just the gravity zone of the main part of town. I mean, it just gravity flows from the water plant. Seven different pump stations and seven water tanks. Next year, that number will be eight, and 25, 26 million gallons come next year. So the water plant is capable of 38 million gallons a day. Right now, our peak day last year was 28, almost 29 million gallons. So this year, quite a bit lower than that so far.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, revenue-wise, unfortunately. 22, 23 so far this year. I didn't look at the last couple days, but. So when you compare that last figure, there's our system to, I'm going to delay here. The blue area is our service territory, and this is pretty locked in. Due to water districts on our south, Fort Collins, Loveland to our north, and Little Thompson Water District to our south, we pretty much know, unless something really changes, the future of how big the Loveland water system will be. It will, other than minor changes, it will be this polygon you see behind us. So that really helps us. Some of those questions before is where are we going? We have a fairly good idea because we know what our service territory is. And based on agreements with neighbors, it's fairly locked in. And what that's going to allow us to do is look at what size pipes, pumps, tanks, all the other stuff that we talked about. So if you keep that graph in mind there, sorry if I'm in front of you. The next thing that we need to know as we master plan is our current usage rates. Some of that was talked about with Nathan and some of the studies that Michelle did. We do that on our capital side. Fortunately, the numbers are always the same.
But we then break it down to average and peak day demand, break it out by customer class. You'll see some of that in a minute. Trends, how much water people use instantaneously. In the morning, we have a lot more water use than we do at 1 in the afternoon or at 2 in the morning. And so we then project that forward using different rates that we use our best crystal ball to look into. What's on this screen here is the Loveland Comprehensive Master Plan from planning. And why that's important to us is, you'll see this isn't exactly the same polygon I just showed you before, but when we look at an area, you pick a spot, how many people are going to live there, so we can apply those usage rates, we need to look at what planning is going to allow. Is it 2 units per acre? Is it 8 units per acre? And we'll use that data to project flow rates coming up. So, sort of interesting graph here. It comes out of the master plan. Shows what our max and average day production is over the last 12 years, I guess, here. You can see there's not a lot of changes. For the most part, just cyclical based on what the weather is doing for the most part. And then the yellow line up there is just the peaking factor of our max day to our average day. Usually it's about 2.2. On the other side, low usage to average is about a half. Right now, average, we're tracking, 10, 12 MGD for the year. Wintertime, that's 6.5 MGD. And so peak, where we at? 27, 28 MGD was last year. This is just the 2017 was a little bit higher tick last year. So
it's interesting to me that over those 12 years, there's been a significant population growth.
Yep.
We're not seeing that reflected in this.
Yep.
That's why we did what we did in terms of the raw water.
Yeah.
Yep. And we'll project that forward a little bit on this side as well. You'll see in just a minute. And that question is, how long does that continue on, or when do you reach that spike? Nathan alluded to it. When that minimum usage kind of is reached, we're not sure.
Was the water area in 2005 the area we would serve in 2005 the same as 2007?
Yeah, well, there's been growth through all that time. Our territory's changed a little bit here and there with different agreements with some of the districts, but for the most part, it's stayed. There's some spots, if you look in that last graph, there's spots where our districts overlap. So there's been spots where, like, hey, you guys should serve it, or vice versa, depending on what's practical. So
I think I answered it.
Okay. We'll do a couple other ones and kind of look back, and then we'll see how we project this stuff forward. This graph probably doesn't surprise anybody, but it's still kind of interesting. It shows the peak usage per month.
Go back. I'm sorry.
Yep.
So on that, hey, we've had growth, yet our production is staying about the same.
Yep.
Given that a majority of the use is outdoors, and given that up until recently, Joe in a truck would install an irrigation system.
Yep.
How do you square that? Because at least in my neighborhood, I don't see that.
People are still watering, right?
Yeah, and they crank it up early, and they stay on late, and they water sidewalks and streets, and you just can't square that.
It's a good question. We were just looking at something on the computer screen a few hours ago. Kind of the same concept.
Okay.
Try to tell people not to do that. I don't know. That's a good... Because we haven't had large-scale marketing. I think it's just people are saying not to do that. I think it's just the only thing I could say is that people have slowly done less. Even though it doesn't seem like it, and you're in my neighborhood, it must be. Because I'd have to go back and look at population, but I don't know what we've grown.
Or maybe it's the net, they're smaller lots.
That could be. They're all a lot of smaller lots.
But the net's, I don't know. Indoor use I could always wrap my head around because that... The washer uses less, the shower uses less.
Coming up in a second, I'll show that growth on a different curve, and you'll see it a little bit more as we stretch it out a little more. We can see that how much population is, but it might be 5,000 people. We're growing about 1.5% a year in our water group, or in our water department. So it's a good question.
Okay.
I don't have a good answer for you. So. This one's just what you would think. It's what we really built all of our system for. 4 months right here. That's true in most municipalities, especially in the West. But for 5 months of the year, you can pretty much set the water plant to 6.5 MGD, and you can start again in March or April and turn it back up. It's pretty much the same all the time. but it, we build everything is built for these peaks right here. And so you can see based on years, and you can, I'm sure in August in 2017, it was much cooler than it had been the couple years before. And so we take this into account, but also look at large scale trends. But it is kind of interesting to see the variability. And, otherwise, this graph probably didn't surprise too many people. Well, it is kind of interesting to dig into. 2012 was really hot. There were a lot of fires. A lot of irrigation use happened. And so you can see between years, in the blue bar here, it's really hard to read this, but the main bulk here is residential use. So that includes outdoor irrigation. Oranges are commercial. You know, for the most part, I shouldn't say it stays the same. You can still see irrigation trends in there. A lot of bigger businesses have irrigation meters. Some of commercial uses have their irrigation off their building meter. And then gray is just irrigation. Parks or HOAs have irrigation. But if we go to the next graph, so go from 2012, you see a peak in, what, 22 MGD on average for the month. And you go to 2014, much wetter year. You can see that number is down here at, what, 18. So these are just year-by-year things that we're looking at, but then we're also going to try and smooth that out here in a second on a curve. 2015, see there's variability. We're back up a little above 20, but you also see a lot of wholesale selling to other water districts, things like that, for whatever reason. So there's always different stories behind the numbers. Don't want to get too much into this, but it's kind of interesting as you look at year-to-year differences. One more comparison. I put 2016 here, but 2012, dry year again. Of our max month day, see whatever it was, July or August, 65% of our water usage was residential. On a less dry year, that number is 56%. So we're also tracking it, like we said, in not only the overall production, but also what the classes are doing. And then Jim will use that data too as we get into rates. So some just broad takeaways over on the side is there seasonal variations between years, variations between customer classes, and really we'll come up with peaking factors, usage rates, growth rates out of all this information for many years to then project forward is the takeaway here. So here's a graph kind of alluded to. Peak day productions. This is just that peak day, not peak month like we had before, peak day. So you can see it's kind of all over the board. Even back into the late 90s, everyone's watering. We must have had a day at 27 and a half. That was probably made people nervous at the water plant back then. But you can see, for the most part, we're tracking up this direction. We had two lines projected forward at 1.5% growth and 2.5% growth. We've now are not taking the 2.5 out of there because 1.5 seems more reasonable based on what we've seen with meter growth the last handful of years. That probably sounds low, but actually what we've had meter growth, that's pretty accurate. Someone talked about conservation. We have factored in 0.5% of water conservation a year for 10 years. Whether that continues, whether that's enough, not sure. It's our best estimate. We're looking at, when I put this together, I have the old number. I was saying 40 MGD by 2040. Actually, it is by 2040. I was looking at the wrong line. So we track out the gray line. We think we're at 40 MGD in 2040. We'll see. So,
sorry, can
yeah,
you go?
No,
can you
go ahead. Back? Yep.
So the gray line at 1.5%, yep. If I heard you say right, that's more in line with what you're seeing in tap growth?
Yes, tap growth.
So is that to say population growth in Loveland may be growing, but they're growing more into multifamily? So we're seeing
could,
the
could be
of
that.
That they're
it,
sharing.
It could be that. Actually, I shouldn't have. That's growth of our peak day is what we're using here. But we're also using it in our tap growth too.
Wrong numbers, yep. Populations.
We also, there's, yeah, I probably didn't need to get into it. There's other parts that are growing, especially on the north side, that are in Loveland that aren't served by us as well. So
another question on the peak day 1.5%.
Yep.
If the 0.5% water conservation for 10 years weren't there, is that to say it would follow a 2% trend?
No, it'd be, we're really going at 1% is what we have factored in there now. Sorry, I should have clarified that. We have 1.5% growth of taps, but we're saying that everybody's using 0.5% less.
So would that be, if they didn't conserve, it would be 2%? Is it that simple?
No, I think it would just be the 1.5%. really taking 0.5% off everybody's indoor water usage every year. So not on this graph, but we're saying people are using now, I don't remember, 110 gallons per day per unit, or gallons per capita per day. We're dropping that down 0.5% every year.
Okay, so it's apples and oranges.
Yeah, sorry, it's probably confusing because I have it on this slide, but we're trying to show that people are using less every year, but our peak is going up still too. It's probably a little confusing. So back to our ultimate service area here. We're not only looking at the big city, but we're also having to look at each of these little pressure zones, or in some cases, big pressure zones. If we have enough storage for the whole city, but we don't have enough, we're not enough pumping capacity to get into this pink area or out here into Sentara, we got a problem. So we're looking at it per zone. And so not a lot here, but our biggest zone is obviously the gravity zone. You'll see the blue inching up. You see this pink one inching up. That's the northwest part of town. It's our second biggest pressure zone, but you can see each of those bumping up, and that's important because each of those, like I said, have different pump stations and tanks within them.
How many interconnections do we have with other water districts?
We have, I think there's 13. It's in the low teens, but that's a little deceiving because there's only a couple that are real big. We have a couple that'll do 3-4 MGD, one with Little Thompson here, one with Fort Collins Loveland up here. We have a large one that's unmetered. If in a real emergency, Fort Collins and Loveland and us can share a large amount of water, never been used before. Otherwise, there's a bunch of smaller ones for different reasons. Serve small developments or second redundant sources for areas. So,
do we have one up near Masonville?
Yep, with Little Thompson. We have a couple out on Glade Road. There's one right here. There's one on the road towards Masonville, there's one with Little Thompson. Most of those are fairly small. And they, without having a chart shown, we sell back and forth different times a year. So like I said, we look at each different pressure zone. Biggest takeaway, I guess, is probably at the bottom. We're looking at a peak. We've updated this since I put this slide to you. About 68 MGD is the ultimate peak of what we see standing here today for the city of Loveland someday. They said we hit 28 last year, plants rated for 38. We see an ultimate peak of 66 with all that growth area on that chart. So that can certainly change based on water use, but that's our best guess at the moment. So we utilize all that information to put into our hydraulic water model. We have a water model that has every one of our water pipes in the system, for the most part, taking my little small ones out, for the most part, every water pipe in the system is in the desktop water model. All of our pumps, pipes, tanks are all in there. Like I said before, we update it fairly regularly, depends on growth. Well, when there's not a lot of growth, it's smaller, or we don't do it as often. It was calibrated based on all of our SCADA data and hydrant tests. And that helps identify our operational concerns and identify master plan projects. Accuracy, like I said before, we've checked it with our SCADA data. We can actually look at, hey, July 17th, 2016, we made this much water, here were the tank levels, hit run on the model and see if it's accurate. So feel pretty good about that. When people call in and want to know pressures or what's happening in their area or their proposed development, we have pretty good data to provide them. Often use it for a pressure tool, but we also use it to look at where we need additional pumping needs, where we have water age. It's a bigger and bigger need these days to know how old water is from when it was treated. To find out what the chlorine residual is, we can estimate that pretty well. So looking forward, we look at that full build out, that 68 MGD over that area that we talked about before, and have plugged in theoretical demands based on the historic usage, and come up with grids of future pipes that need to be built. As you see in pink, our pipes that we project. We don't look at little 8-inch water lines inside subdivisions, but the big stuff going down major streets or what a lot. And what, really what we're trying to do is make sure that that whole future area has fire flow and sufficient pressure. So these pipes are proposed to provide all of our minimums to people and max days usage. Some of that was different this year. We used a program called Optimatics, actually a couple years ago now. It's a cloud-based software that runs the water model literally thousands and thousands of times. Normally, and we put forth everywhere we could think to put a pipe, a pump station, a tank, gave it all kinds of scenarios and weighted it in different ways, and then it literally ran it literally thousands of times. The good part was the results came out very, very similar to what staff and consultants have been proposing for many, many years. So it was a nice, I guess, double check anyway. One thing, a lot of times master plans look out to the full build out, but we've been wondering, what about some interim steps? Okay, we know we need this someday, but what do we need in the next 10 years or 20 years? What's important? And so we've, there's a lot of incremental steps between our peak 28 right now and I'm gonna say 68 now. Big ones like, when do we enlarge the water plant? That's pretty easy as we watch the usage of the overall city go up, but when do we need other items in the city? So we've put some incremental steps in there, 38 MGD, 46 MGD. We've put some spots where, hey, we need to have these things done by this amount of flow coming into the system. And that helps us to budget those future projects. So we talked about capital planning. You guys see that 10-year budget, but we have a 10 and 20-year planning window as well as this ultimate planning. Really, we utilize those model results. A lot of people in the industry, in my mind, are trying to get just purely analytical, purely by model results. I think we try and use a lot of engineering judgment. If that optimatic spits out, hey, you need a 16-inch water line that goes into a 24, that goes into a 36, and back to a 12, we try and look at that and say, that doesn't make sense. And it will spit out results like that for random parts of town. So we try and use, like we said, the judgment, our budget resources, and then the levels of service that you guys have talked or we've heard about before. We try and keep minimum pressures at different places.
Do you give and finance the dollar amounts from all this for them to input into?
It goes into our water.
For the 2060, what could be expected?
Whatever we plug into our tenure, the stuff that needs to happen, and it goes to Jim when we do the cost of service study. What is it, every 3 years? But you know, there's things that then we have to make best use of resources. I mean, there's a lot of things that make a lot of sense to do right now operationally. Make it way easier to operate certain tanks if we put different pipes on the ground. But you know, budget has to be there too. So. So we talked a little bit about the pipes shown here are the ones that meet our ultimate level and build out. So it doesn't look like a lot, but some of these are rather large, and just inside of even one little individual spot, there'd be all kinds of little 8-inch waterline grids inside of there as well.
And we've got, 450 miles now?
Yeah.
Of your little domain. So in 2060, how many?
Man, I haven't looked. The best way for me to answer that question would be just to scale it off of what we already have on there. There'd probably be, another 40% ballpark? There's a lot of pipes not shown on here. Like I said, all the these are just the backbone pipes, the larger stuff.
So at the south end there, is that the water tank down by Campion? Is that?
Yeah, that's this one here. Long term, because right now that's, without a lot of detail, it's way far away from our customers right now. It's kind of, it makes it hard to operate the system right now. But long term, as there's continued growth down here in the southwest, and then big time out along 402, that will move. As we get demand out here, that's going to help bring water out of that tank. And actually, the model shows the need for additional piping out here, but it's quite a ways down the road.
Does that tank turn over very often?
Yeah, it has to because we make it, but it's hard to do. Water comes into town right here. That tank right there feeds this gravity zone here. The other one that does is right here. You see, there's way less distance here than here. So water is going to take the path of least resistance, less friction. It goes here real easy, but it's hard to get it out of here when a lot of the demand's over here. So we. Our operators have a variety of ways to do it, to pump it out of that tank, but it's a challenge. What will be a lot easier is when there is demand out here and some of these pipes get built out this direction, it'll suck water out of that tank a lot better. We're really going to build a big loop around the city that will help do that.
So what's the little round thing with that? That's not a tank?
That's a new pump station.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a big area up here. Everything, for the most part, everything west of Wilson is waiting on a pump station. So that then goes into the 10-year budget. Nothing really to see here, just a snapshot of our budget. So we take those projects and what's needed for intermediary steps of how much flow we need to supply, and it becomes projects in the 10-year budget that you guys all see. So big picture overview that we've talked about is we're monitoring current usage, we're projecting that forward, coming up with projects that meet those future demands for our customers. So that should be it, maybe. There we go. Yeah.
Two questions.
Yeah.
Well, question and statement.
Yeah.
What have you, has your planning horizon, does that cross the build out of Loveland where you have reached saturation?
Yep.
Can't build anymore?
Yep.
At what point is that?
It was right about 2065, I want to say, is where we went to. And that's where the old master plan we picked it up had a peak day of 72 MGD. This one, we ran out of room before we got to 72 MGD. So that's why it's in the mid-60s now. But I mean, that's, it's way out there, but we are looking at the best guess right now as to what
that was. I won't see
it. I might not either.
The other thing, and Sean focused on a slide I thought fascinating.
Yeah.
We have significant population growth, and the numbers in the dashboard, by the way, that you guys have access to, there's been a 31% increase in population since 2005.
Yes. Yeah.
And that number is 18,000 people. So that's pretty significant, and yet our demand spot, I think that's fascinating.
I think 8,000 of them come to my King Supers.
You know them all. They're still eating, though.
So, is yours one down the road here?
Yes.
That's mine, too.
Oh, that's horrible.
We can do this, and Brighton has to have a $70 million water slush fund. How do we do it?
We have a great numbers guy over in the corner. He keeps the slush fund very quiet. Not saying there's not one, I'm just saying we know how to keep it quiet, that's all.
After seeing that on TV last night, I really went to see what our cash funds, to see if we're going to be accused of a slush fund, too.
They'll never find it, Larry.
To start going up, I mean, I think our tallest building is about 5 floors now or something.
Yep.
Does that change what you have to do with your pipes and stuff?
This discussion has been had internally a lot. Is we went in and found all the vacant land in the middle of town, but we just used the densities that are assumed right now. We did not go in and RAS blocks and build 10-story high-rises. That's where, and that's a good reason why this gets updated semi-regularly. If that becomes ever increasing, which it might, you know, in 20, 30 years,
that's why we work with the comprehensive plan with our planning group over in the planning department.
We did not, because that question comes up all the time, well, what happens if, and at the moment, we did not go do that in the plan to show spots getting razzed and filled up, so, or right or wrong.
So the this is all on the capital side of it. How do, if the raw water were to be dedicated or purchased and provided to the water treatment plant, but the number is there. This is how much water is going to be necessary to serve this.
Yep.
Presumably, that's also being used on the raw water side of things. And I've missed the last couple of meetings. And
we kind of hope they match up, Sean.
You know what? I got a real fear of that.
But what I'm asking is, has that piece been presented and I missed it, or is that coming?
Yes. Portions of it have.
Okay.
Yeah, we talked about that last time we presented the raw water master plan with Bronk engineers that were here.
Okay.
Because it shows that we use about 14,000 acre feet right now. And our projections get us up to about 30,000 acre feet of firm yield if we add Chimney Hollow, if we add the downstream storage.
Yeah.
So we'll about double our raw water portfolio just with those two projects. So what that means is we can roughly double our population up to 150,000 people with our raw water portfolio. So we're looking really good.
And does that meet this projection as well?
I went next door and talked to Larry about 6 months ago because I got that fear all of a sudden. Man, we had kind of came at it different directions and they were the same. So I think we're in good shape. You guys were well on your way to supplying that 60-some. Right now with those probably you said, Roger, I'm just talking out loud. We're in the 50 MGD range, probably a firm. Well, anyway, they matched. We went and we looked at our spreadsheet. I opened theirs, we opened ours, and they were the same projection going long term.
See, Tanner works on max day. That's what he's worried about. Larry's working on the annual volume amounts, so they're different. It's apple oranges comparisons. But generally speaking, we're getting out to that 2060 range and sitting pretty good with our raw water portfolio based on Chimney Hollow and the downstream storage.
And no additional acquisitions.
Right, and we'll get those, but we don't know what they are, so we don't really plug those into our raw water master plan.
You mean dedications will come in, but no active acquisitions are
dedications will come in, and we don't really show them our raw water master plan because we don't know what they are going to be.
I think I gave you a diagram that showed each plateau.
Yep, I remember that.
Well,
it comes into the conversation we had about the cash in lieu and could we buy CBT, and I've always come at it from that other angle of do we need to? If the portfolio is sufficient to meet the build out, do we even need to?
Right. And each development has to come and bring us water, so if they're bringing us water, we're in great shape, but if they're bringing us cash in lieu, we use that to buy the Chimney Hollow Reservoir and other projects like that.
Here's a radical idea. If the cash in lieu collection is not sufficient to pay for Chimney Hollow, and Chimney Hollow is our only next increment of water, why not raise cash in lieu sufficient to so that we don't have to bond at all for Chimney Hollow?
Because probably development will stop. It would kill development.
Yeah.
Will they not come to my King Supers then?
Yeah. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that number would be.
They will come to these meetings, though.
$150,000 a unit, something like that.
Well, it's a timing problem.
We can raise rates.
We'll need to bond next year.
Yeah.
So we would need several years of revenue to compensate. But that'll make our payment, though. Because right now, we're projecting this cash flow revenue coming each year to help us make that debt service for the 30-year loan for Chimney Hollow. So if development stops and we don't have any more cash flow coming, we're going to have a huge debt service problem.
Yeah, but we're long in like CBT water shares, though, right? That's what you're...
We have about 12,900 units. Pretty solid.
They're worth quite a bit. So, I mean, if you've got some debt problems, I mean...
Well, we can't get rid of them, though.
We're not allowed to do that?
Never sell. That's what I thought Larry was getting to a while ago. I thought he was going to tell us sell our CBT. But we want to hang on to it. As far as I can see, is our portfolio of water is pretty good. I think we're in good shape. We just continue doing what we're doing.
A little side note, you guys asked what our cap was. Last time I got a confirmation of the cap, it was we acquired 5,000 additional units.
Yeah.
But it's an adjustable thing.
Do we need to work more on trying to promote through education and that to more conservation of the water?
We do an awful lot of outreach. In fact, what I'm going to do is, we haven't had a visit from our friends in customer relations for a while, so there have been some program changes there, so I'm going to make a note that we'll have them next month or the month after on some of the efficiency outreach that we're doing.
One concern I have is if we preach more conservation and then we hit a period where it's dry and we don't have any water, then we're in trouble. We're going to use less water and less water, and then there's a drought period, and we're going to not be able to obtain as much water as we were in the past. Then we're in trouble because we can't make up that difference that conservation of that water. Do you understand what I mean?
No, I don't. Because if you're already using less, due to education, we have it here. And it started here, looks to me like you're much better off that everyone's used to doing this when it dropped.
But I'm afraid there's going to be a shortage of additional water. I mean,
you're going to go on the market to solve your drought problem?
Well, yeah.
I doubt that.
I see what you need to do.
And when somebody writes a book about what California went through, we all have to read it to find out, or Australia is another one to do that. I'm still going back. I'm just amazed still we have, 18,000 more people over how many more years than our average, our peaks, and that's just without trying all that hard, although I think we're all aware that water is not this is not Florida or East Texas.
Yeah, go But we are in the business of selling water, so.
And we are down. It was a great spring, but we are down in terms of sales and revenue.
About 15%. How much water has come out of the water plant this year?
Yep. And now, speaking of numbers, dollars.
Yes, Jim.
He's not a happy man. Everybody turn their sprinklers on tonight. Make Jim happy.
For our two new members, we normally strive to make these meetings 4 hours, so we're going to come in under budget probably.
Not quite that long.
Yeah.
Sean, your comment about the South King Supers makes me think some of you are familiar with Mike Scholl from our Economic Development Department. He made a comment a number of years ago that King Supers is a money-printing factory.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest economic development home runs that Loveland really has ever had.
Yeah, it's continuing that trend.
What's that, Gene?
It's an archery course.
Yeah, it's archery. Well, I go there and get gas, and it's sometimes you got to wait in line to get gas. So.
Yes. Okay, well, a quick view here at where we stand year to date. Water sales and wastewater sales actually through June at least were trending fairly close. Water, we're about 46,000 under, and on wastewater about 93,000 under. Power sales about 700K under budget year to date. But then in the next slide, you'll see we have an offsetting where we're under budget in our purchase power expense as well, and so those two sort of offset each other. actually, a little bit further down the road. This is our growth-related revenues, our SIF and our PIF revenues. So you'll see water is a bit ahead of budget, power very close. Wastewater showing under budget, but the calendarization for the wastewater is a little bit quirky, and so this is showing we're $220,000 under budget. If we look at things on a more linear scale, we're actually about $50,000. So we're I feel like we're closer to budget than what this chart indicates. Here's our O&M expenses. So you'll see in water, waste, and power, we're significantly under budget. The something that's a big contributor in all three utilities is our CIS project. We have about $900,000 budgeted this year for water and wastewater, their contribution toward the new CIS system. And then power has about $2.1 million budgeted. I don't believe any of that actually has been spent year to date, so those are significant contributors to being under budget. Purchase power, we're under budget by about $615,000 so far through June. Our general capital expenses, all three are showing as being well under budget. Something that contributes to this is that our rollovers, our capital projects that where the budget is not completely spent in 2018 and then rolled in 2019, those show up in the budget in the month in which council approves the rollovers, which is March. So as an example, for the wastewater plant, we rolled, I think, in general, about $14 million. So that all shows up budgeted in the month of in the month of March and makes those numbers look a little bit under more than they probably would be if it was spread over the whole year. And then on our kind of the same thing going on in our growth-related capital expenses.
Not the goal. So,
yeah, it is. It's just, again, it's if we were able to spread those rollovers over the course of the rest of the year, then it wouldn't look so far under budget at this stage. So. And yeah, I'd be happy to answer any questions or take any comments that anyone might have. Larry?
Of course. So on raw water, the total revenue budget and the capital spend, that's all Chimney Hollow money that probably won't get spent this year.
That's right.
And then on the balance sheet, under wastewater, bond interest payable was a negative $24 million. What is that? And
what page is that? What page is that on?
That's all my spreadsheets on page one, but it's not. So it's on the balance sheet.
On page 110?
It's bond interest payable.
24.
For wastewater, negative 24 million.
It looks like it's showing us as a positive on current liabilities. It's showing as bond interest payable under current liabilities, and then also as external loan payable under long-term liabilities.
Yeah, what is the positive then? I put that as negative. What is it?
Well, okay, so for wastewater, we borrowed a total of $24.9 million for the expansion of the wastewater plant, and we just finished drawing down the remainder of that amount earlier this year. So that's why it's showing such a large amount that's still outstanding as a liability.
Oh, so that's both interest and principal?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. So I should change that.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, actually, Larry, because bond interest payable, that seems a bit misleading. I think probably better wording we could use.
Yeah. And is that then that negative $36 million unrestricted net position? That's really kind of the offset then?
Yes. And I can get more clarification on that as well.
And that's normal then? Before that, at the end of the first quarter, was 9.4 negative. That's normal?
And as far as that unrestricted line,
yeah.
Let me check with Joyce Robinson, our county manager, on how that figure's derived. I do know that with the loans, that ends up making it a bigger negative number.
Sorry. It's just big numbers, and they kind of stuck out.
Yes,
they did stick out. I just thought
that. Did I understand your question that the liability includes interest?
It does.
Why? I mean, you use the interest in an expense, the liability of principal on a loan or a bond.
Yes. Actually, I believe you are correct. That this is just the principal portion. The interest portion would be. I believe you are correct. So yes, I stand corrected. Thank you. That's a good point. So yeah, this is just. Yeah, bond, and that's why bond interest payable is an odd way to label this. So.
Well, and now it could be if you've accumulated some interest that you owe and have not paid it, then it could be accumulated interest payable. But if it's the liability itself, the bond itself, that normally doesn't.
Yeah, I would assume it is just the principal portion.
Okay.
One observation I made was that when you total the assets up, almost a half $1 billion. That's a big number.
Mm-hmm.
Big number.
Yes, and these are at net book value. So real value would be considerably more. If you want to look at current replacement value, say would be considerably more than this. Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're down to commission and council reports. Steve, you want to start?
Sure. Probably the big activity that's gone around council is we spent 4.5 hours discussing the merits of authorizing or taking to citizens and asking them to approve the sale, cultivation, manufacturing, and so forth of marijuana in the city limits. 2010, I think it was, a ballot issue was turned down 61-39 for just the medical marijuana. So we'll see what happens with this one. I suspect there'll be a lot of dollars and interest and passion with that issue. Last night we had a fair amount of discussion. I just lost my train of thought.
On the half percent sales tax.
Yeah, the sales tax.
Half percent
sales tax. I'm going to show my concern. The idea of having a building, spending $61 million on another recreation facility, I have a little trouble with that. That's the 64% of the amount of money they're asking and expecting to generate from the increase in sales tax, and to spend it on a recreation facility. Roughly, I think less than 20% is going to go on infrastructure things. So there are three of us that just don't, the numbers don't work close, but those are probably big issues.
Larry, you got anything?
What was the dollar amount?
For the new recreation center, it's $61 million.
Larry, you got a comment?
I'm just hoping that that first marijuana outlet isn't next year.
Starbucks. Liquor store is going to go out of business because King Super is selling beer.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't have anything.
You got anything, Gene?
No. A couple things. So I was recently appointed by the Colorado Water Conservation Board to serve on what they're calling Colorado River Demand Management Work Groups, and I'm on the Local Government and Economic Work Group. So I guess staff, or if the LUC, if you hear about things with regards to demand management on the Colorado River and how it might affect the CBT project, and you have thoughts or ideas that I ought to convey, I think that's my role, is to listen to folks in the South Platte Basin as well as talk to you about what I'm learning. But there's all sorts of disclosure stuff around what I can't say, depending on who says it and all that stuff. I don't know the ground rules quite yet, but I'll let you know as soon as I understand them. The second one is I'm doing my part to bring revenue to the water fund. We recently installed a pool.
Write that down, Jim.
This is an education opportunity. So the out of respect for my neighbors, so that they wouldn't wake up one day and see this physical specimen without a shirt on jumping over their fence. I told them I was putting in the pool, and one of my neighbors was like, wow, yeah, it's quite an investment. You know, they take a lot of water, and it's not a huge pool. It's above ground, 15-foot by 48-inch deep pool. It's not a huge pool. And I said, well, how much do you think the water costs? I knew the answer. And he's like, well, it's got to be hundreds of dollars. I said, no, it's $13. So we're dirt cheap. That's the problem. It's $13 to fill a pool.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Raise revenue to pay for that new revenue.
Right.
Yeah. For you to buy a bottle of water and use that, wasn't he supposed
oh,
to?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I paid $13 for a 15 pack of Blue Moon. At King Supers.
John, you got anything?
Yeah. Interesting what's going on with Chimney Hollow and the litigation on that. And I'm looking, are we having anything else going on in the tenure program for power?
I'm sorry, I missed.
I attended one meeting on the power, was all, for the tenure power plant.
Yes.
All right, are we having more of those later on? Or is it a done deal?
That for the power budget?
Yeah.
Yes, sir, we're done.
Okay.
Yep.
And then last but not least, I would like to congratulate you on the wonderful new podium.
Yes. Yeah, that other one was pretty embarrassing, wasn't it? People sink it down through the course of the hour.
Good observation.
Yes.
Okay, Dan? I just can report that on this past Sunday, I returned from a 2.5-week trip to Chile. Hmm. And it was a great time. Some of the highlights included being in totality for the solar eclipse on July 2nd.
Oh, cool.
Which was an amazing experience. Weather was very cooperative. We watched it over the Pacific Ocean at La Serena, right in the midst of the path of totality. And then another highlight was skiing in the Andes about a week ago, day of skiing in the Andes.
They have missed it.
It's high quality area. It's top notch. But there's not a tree anywhere. No trees. it's all rock. So it's a whole different kind of experience, but it's beautiful nonetheless.
So
it has some good Chilean white.
Yeah. Do they have any challenges as far as power and water?
I'm sure they do. One thing I did observe as we took our five-hour drive from the capital city of Santiago up to La Serena to the north, I saw a considerable amount of wind generation up there. They're a country without a lot of resources. So they do have those challenges here.
Do they subsidize?
they certainly have a major air quality problem in Santiago, and I was there. We were there in the midst of winter with inversions, and it was nasty air quality.
Well, thanks for running the meeting last month. I was in Hawaii, and they have challenges there, power-wise and water-wise. So one side of the island on Maui is wet, the other side is dry. So they got to get the water from one side of the island to the other side. So that's a real challenge. And their power, they're trying to get everybody that they can to put solar on their buildings so that they can offset some of that power expense they've got. But they don't have any coal mines over there or gas mines, so it's got to be always consistent frequency.
It's a challenge over there.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, they subsidize. Okay. Glad to be here. Richard? Okay.
A couple quick things. Thank you for being here. I'm sorry I wasn't here to introduce myself at the beginning. Courtney will be arranging a department orientation for both of you. A lot of fun and very, very informational. So I think you'll have a good time with that. Last night, there was a huge effort last night, or a huge action last night by the City Council in the second reading of an ordinance for supplemental funds to purchase 9.1 acres north of the wastewater treatment plant. So that is a done deal, and so that my retirement villa now is talking about a slush fund, that's what it is, and that's my retirement villa right next to the plant down there. The wastewater treatment plant continues to be on time and under budget. The last, at the end of June, it was at a 90% complete. They're putting in flat work in there right now, a couple other minor things to finish up. And we will be putting in landscaping and things like that after the hot weather in the fall. There will be a first flush ceremony, whatever you want to call it. We will have a celebration to christen the new facility come the fall when the weather cools off. Probably a little better to be down there when it's cool, not so warm. But that's going very, very well. It's been a great project. And finally, last week we had the Division of Water Resources came in to do the dam inspection at Green Ridge Glade. And the inspection went fine, but one of the really cool things that came out of that was that the director of that division accompanied the inspector, and just a couple of really wonderful folks. They pointed out a grant program that they said that this particular facility was custom made for that. We can get a grant to study the possibility of raising the dam and increasing the storage at Green Ridge Glade. That dam was always intended, the possibility was always there from a structural standpoint to be raised, to add about, and I think Larry, we were talking about another 650 acre feet of storage, which would be tremendous. So
10% more?
Just under 10%, I think. Yeah, it would be great. So he is pursuing that grant, and it's the kind of thing I don't think we would do within the next X number of years, but it would be great to have that study to support going forward. And so at the point in time when we maybe have paid off Chimney Hollow, 10, 12 years or something, that we could look then to raise the dam. Be good to have that study in our back pocket. So that, I thought that was really good news, and they were great folks. And the dam is in good shape. So that's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Courtney, do you have anything?
Just that next month we will not be mailing.
That's right. I got to go electronic.
Yes. Oh, we will be going electronic. If you do need any assistance setting up a PDF reader or if you would prefer me to mail it to you rather than send you a link to download it, just communicate with me on what you need so that I can help you. And of course, I can I'll do whatever I can to help you out.
So is the best approach to download the PDF onto our device and view it that way?
Yeah, you can always use the Wi-Fi here and click on the link once you get here, you know, or at home. But I would say a local copy would probably work. That's what I would do if I was you.
Yeah.
If you do, you know, occasionally we are going to have 11 by 17s. They're going to be great because you will be able to zoom in and really, you know, sometimes you get some of these big 11 by 17s with all of the charts and graphs on there and you're like, what does that say? You'll really be able to zoom in and see what they say. So
you'll send your recommendations on the laptop or tablet that I should buy.
I can certainly help you with that. I don't know if I can make specific recommendations, but I could tell you what you need.
Great. Thanks for that. Okay, I think we're adjourned.